Well, it seems a little odd to be celebrating Christmas after the actual day, but it only seems odd to those of us who grew up in, well, places that didn't pay a lot of attention to the church year, because we were in the season of Christmas. It's Christmas until Epiphany, till next Sunday, January 6th, which is why we sang a bunch of Christmas songs, and we're going to sing a few more, and why it's very useful for us to have a bit more time to think about Christmas and what it actually means. And I'm not going to go into some kind of lengthy description of sort of the historical natures of Christmas or anything of that nature. What I'm just talking about is the gift of Christmas. And I chose that sermon title. I like it because it goes in lots of different directions, or at least a few that I could see. And the first and most obvious gift of Christmas is Jesus. I read about it today, the story of him arriving in this stable, this mysterious incarnation, something that's beyond us. At that time, people didn't know exactly what it meant. We still don't know exactly what it means, because the notion of Jesus being fully human, just like us, but fully divine, not like us, but like God at the same time, is beyond us. We simply don't understand that. We're always fully human, and we're never anything else. No matter how obnoxious we might seem to our siblings when they called us names, we were still fully human, no matter what. But Jesus was given to us as a gift. Because what is the primary sort of definition of a gift? A gift is something that you are given. It's something that comes with no strings attached. Now, admittedly, sometimes we give gifts with those unseen strings attached, and sometimes we keep track of who's given who gifts and who's gotten more and all of that, but that's not the purpose or the sort of the ultimate reason for gift. Gifts are given just because. If somebody gives you a gift and you try to pay them for it, well, two things will happen. First of all, they'll almost certainly be offended. And second of all, it won't be a gift anymore. It'll be a transaction, which is altogether different. And so at Christmas, that original Christmas, all that long time ago, we were given the gift of Jesus. And as I was looking at that sermon title, I realized that, well, Christmas is a gift itself. The season that we're in. Not just for us to think carefully about what it means that Jesus came to live with us as us for a while, although that's certainly a wonderful part of Christmas, but as we notice every year pretty much, Christmas brings out good things in people that we might not expect otherwise. Christmas makes people better, almost always. Why is it that Charles Dickens' famous story, A Christmas Carol. I always tell people that if you've always wanted to read Dickens, read that one, because it's shorter than all the rest of them. And it's really, really good. He wrote it in 1843, if I remember correctly. It was published on December 19th. It was sold out by December 24th that first year. It has never been out of print. And what is the essence of the story of A Christmas Carol is a terrible, curmudgeonly old person becomes something else. Becomes transformed into this generous, wonderful person because of Christmas and what it can mean. Why has that story never been out of print? Because it resonates so strongly with us. Because we see it every year. Some years we see it in ourselves, where we realize that for these few weeks we've become less difficult to be with. We've become more generous, more open, more kind. And sometimes it sticks. Sometimes that's a transforming moment for us too, just like it was for Scrooge. We see it in other people, co-workers and neighbors who ordinarily are wrapped up in themselves, possibly even for good reasons. We don't know. They're just so closed in. But maybe at that time of the year, they open up a little bit. People that ordinarily don't say hello to you say Merry Christmas, and they smile. This season, this opportunity for us as a culture that doesn't necessarily have a strong connection with where it comes from, still has this wonderful moment of delight in each other, of joy, of kindness, of generosity. Whether you believe the details of the Christmas story or not, it seems to spread over. To our Muslim friends, who obviously don't celebrate Christmas the way we do, but enter into the season itself. our friends who don't believe, or at least don't think they believe anything about the spiritual world, who still give gifts and become a little bit better, often by their own definitions. It's a delightful time of the year. It's a gift just to have this time when we can be a little less focused on ourselves and on our problems, and a little less focused on, well, just buying things, which seems kind of strange, but still, if there's one day of the year that commerce doesn't just happen everywhere, it's Christmas Day is one of them, where stores are closed and you can be with your family. Sometimes you're forced to be with your family because there's nothing else to do. And often, thinking back to my years when I was at that stage, like I say, the biggest problem with adolescents isn't that their parents are their parents. It's that they have parents at all. I'm not quite sure how we were supposed to make it through adolescence without parents, but we somehow had this feeling that, you know, if only our families didn't exist, we wouldn't be so embarrassed all the time. That was my take on it anyway. And yet at Christmas, it all kind of went away, at least for a few days. It's a glorious, glorious time. But even more than that, Christmas is the season where we celebrate the coming of Jesus, and that changed everything. That changed everything. There's a commentator I read now and then who is, well, has a good facility with Greek, something I perhaps once had, but most certainly no longer do, and occasionally produces what he calls literal translations, which are sometimes helpful. And from Titus, we have a translation that looks like this. Not from works on the basis of righteousness that we did, but on the basis of his mercy he saved us, which is coming from Titus 4. But when the kindness and love of God our Savior appeared, he saved us not because of righteous things we had done, but because of his mercy. And the point that he's making, and the point that I draw from that, is that we are no longer responsible for our own salvation. Now, we never really were. When you look at the Old Testament, you look at the sacrificial system, there still isn't that. You know, if we look carefully at it, if we do our best to fully understand it, we'll see that this is still something God does. But it was so easy for us to misunderstand that and say that if we didn't do the sacrifices in exactly the right way, then we couldn't be saved. And the flip side of that is that if we do them in exactly the right way, we will be saved. We have to be saved, which means that all salvation now rests on us. God is the sort of the engine of salvation, if you will. But if we don't do it, it simply can't be done. And we have to do it in a particular way. And that was such a burden. It was such a burden. And Jesus came and said, you know, it doesn't have to be that way. It was never really intended to be that way. And I'm here to show you a different way. That righteousness, or that salvation, is no longer accomplished by righteousness, but by mercy. We sometimes think that if mercy is extended, it somehow turns into license, or if there's mercy, there's no need for us to change our lives or do anything of that nature. And that's not the case. I don't know if any of you have been on the receiving end of what might be considered a merciful act, but I have. More than once, I've had people who could have done things to me that mostly would have been considered just, because I deserved the outcome. And they said, no, I'm not going to. That changed me. Not in the way that I said, well, I guess I can do that whenever I like, and I'll get away with it. But instead, it changed me into saying, I don't want to go through that again. I don't want to be in that position again. Mercy highlighted what I'd done and highlighted what could have been the consequences. It didn't erase them. It made me even more aware of them than I would have been if I would have had to live through them, some of which would have been extremely unpleasant. mercy is not something that we take for granted easily, because it's an extraordinary moment of saying that what you deserve, you're not going to get. And salvation is no longer accomplished by human beings. It never was, but we thought it was. And we looked at the sacrificial system, and we looked at all of those rules and the regulations, and we just said, okay, I guess this is all about us now. Salvation is not accomplished by human beings, but by God alone. And by taking us out of that system that said, these are the steps you have to do, and you have to do them in this exact way, and these are the animals you have to acquire, and these are the people who have to do this for you, and all of those things that were so difficult to do, Christmas takes us out of those and says that God has taken over all of those burdens that we couldn't carry anyway, and is extending salvation to us because of the great love he has for us, and is providing mercy. One of the things about mercy is that it doesn't say that what you did doesn't matter. And it doesn't say that the consequences don't exist. Mercy says what you did was wrong or bad or whatever it might have been. These are the consequences that are not going to be applied to you. Mercy leads to lots of things. But for almost all of us, it leads to gratitude and a deeper understanding of what we've done and what we've received. That came with Christmas. A new understanding of who we were, that when we are attuned to pay attention to it, as we are in this season of the year, for virtually everyone we know, it makes us better people. The fact that some of our coworkers or friends don't understand anything about the Christmas story is irrelevant. They absorb the reality of what it means just through what the season has become. I join many people in deploring the commercialization of Christmas. I find it abhorrent that we have Christmas decorations in stores before Halloween. It drives me crazy. There's lots of Christmas songs I could easily go the rest of my life and never hear. But in spite of all those things, which are really so small, this season has become imbued with the reality of God, whether people admit it or not, and it changes how we behave. And it gives me hope every year that when I go through this, the people who poo-poo what I do every Sunday and what we're doing here together are just a little bit better than they are the rest of the year. The season of Christmas is this range of gifts, from the opportunity to give and receive gifts from people we love and know and people that we barely know at office Christmas gift exchanges and all of those things, all the way up to those moments of deep reflection when we are so grateful for all that God has done for us and everything in between. It's a wonderful season, whether we know everything about it, whether we understand all of the details of the incarnation, which we don't and we never will. We still have the benefit of knowing that God loved us enough that when we demonstrated comprehensively that we couldn't follow a particular set of instructions, he said, well, that's enough of that. We're going to do something else. And that something else was God taking on human form so that we would know always that the God who saves us knows exactly who we are, knows what we're capable of, and knows what it means to be human from the inside. And that is yet one more of the many and wonderful gifts of Christmas. Amen.